rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Eid, Judge Harris, Judge Bratfold for Judge Bentley. The Honorable Kayala C. Eid presiding.
Be seated. Morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is January 22nd, 2025. This is the third case on our oral argument calendar this morning. This is A240428, application for a sulfate site-specific standard for Hay Lake, located downstream of the U.S. Steel Keetac. Again, my name is Kayala Eid. I'm serving as presiding judge today. I'm joined by Judge Harris and by Judge Bratfold. A couple of housekeeping matters. The podium has a little switch in front, so in case you haven't argued here before, you can move it up and down to your comfort. Counsel for the relator shall have 15 minutes for your opening argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes for your argument. There will be an oral argument, an oral audio recording of this, no video, but it will be on our website later this afternoon or tomorrow for anyone to listen to. That's the only recording that's to be made of this proceeding. Failure to comply with that rule could result in sanction. The proceeding is also being streamed on our website, so people can watch it from outside the Judicial Center. Counsel for both parties, when you begin, please identify yourself and who you represent. Let us know how you'd like us to refer to you. Counsel for the relator, whenever you're ready.
Well, thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Jeremy Greenhouse, and good morning. I represent Relator United States Steel Corporation, which I'll refer to as U.S. Steel. In 2014, U.S. Steel submitted an application to respondent Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, or MPCA, for a site-specific water quality standard for sulfate in Hay Lake, which, as you observed, is a small receiving water about 5 miles downstream from U.S. Steel's Keetac mining operation in Keewatin, Minnesota. The MPCA sat on that application for an entire decade, during which time the agency twice changed its mind on what must be shown to obtain a sulfate site-specific standard. And finally, in early 2024, MPCA issued a two-page letter denying the application on the basis of a guidance document it had issued a month and a half earlier. We're asking the court to reverse MPCA's denial of the application and to remand it to MPCA to complete legislatively mandated rulemaking before reconsidering the application as necessary. There are two overriding reasons I will discuss in my argument today as to why the court should reverse the denial. The first reason is that MPCA improperly denied U.S. Steel's application on the basis of an unpromulgated rule. The second reason is that the MPCA acted in excess of its statutory authority regarding key determinations fundamental to its denial of U.S. Steel's application. So turning to the first reason, MPCA's denial of U.S. Steel's application must be reversed because it was based upon an unpromulgated rule, specifically a December 2023 guidance document MPCA published titled Framework for Developing and Evaluating Site-Specific Sulfate Standards for the Protection of Wild Rice. The framework is squarely within the definition of a rule from Minnesota statute section 14.02, which is in relevant part every agency statement of general applicability and future effect adopted to implement or make specific the law enforced or administered by the agency. The framework leaves little doubt, first of all, that it's intended to be of general applicability and future effect. For example, one of the framework's stated goals is to, quote, establish expectations for applicants requesting a site-specific standard and for agency staff reviewing those applications. Similarly, MPCA indicates in the framework that it will evaluate applications based on whether an applicant has followed the recommendations provided in this document. These statements are not aimed at a specific current application. Rather, they are establishing the framework as the measuring stick for any and all future applicants for sulfate site-specific standards. And additionally, the framework
meets... Was this argument raised in front of the rulemaking authority at the lower decision-making? So my question is, I'm wondering whether or not this argument is forfeited because you didn't raise this argument with the agency, that being that they were using an unpromulgated rule.
Your Honor, I don't know specifically what conversations took place in that regard, but I will say that I think it's the timing here is critical because this document came out in December 2023, and the application was denied in mid-February 2024. So during that time, there really was no debate or argument that could have happened on the legality of the framework as a measuring stick for this application.
Is it your view that the framework is binding on MPCA in terms of how it dealt with this particular application and future sulfate site-specific applications?
Yeah, that is a mouthful. Whether it's binding on MPCA, I'm not sure. I think what I would focus on is whether it meets the definition of a rule. And I think that's what guides the analysis of whether it's an unpromulgated rule or not. I imagine MPCA might say that, oh, we never went through rulemaking, so this isn't binding on us like something that's already in the Minnesota rules. But the effect of this document and the policies within it are that it is a rule and that it's, you know, general applicability, future effect, and, you know, makes specific the law that's implemented by the agency. So as I say, I think that third criteria, whether it implements and makes specific the law, is also met in this case. And, you know, that's clear from many sections of the framework. For example, in there, MPCA outlines in great detail what it will consider more appropriate, which is the sparse language regarding site-specific standards in Minnesota Rule 7050.0220 subpart 7. So, for example, the framework talks about, you know, sets forth what must be required for the type and duration of monitoring data that MPCA will expect, the criteria for defining a numeric site-specific standard, and instructions for how to characterize and evaluate wild rice production from a water body. So the framework's not merely a collection of content suggestions for applications, rather it's MPCA's statement as how such applications will be judged by MPCA. And so
if it was the former, would that cut against your argument and support the idea that this was a decision made on a case-by-case basis rather than the application of an unpromulgated rule?
So when
if it was the former, meaning that these are suggestions that will guide suggestions to applicants about information that will guide MPCA's analysis of a particular application, mm-hmm. Would that cut against your argument that MPCA relied on an unpromulgated rule in this context and instead made a case-by-case decision based on the specific facts before it?
I think it's really hard to see this as just a set of suggestions. For example, as I say, there's very specific guidance in there. For example, you have to have 10 years of water quality monitoring data or two boom and bust cycles. You know, the MPCA goes out of its way to indicate in there, you know, this is not a proposed rule, for example. But I mean, it kind of, if it talks like a rule and quacks like a rule, I think it is a rule in this case. And not only some of those specific things, but they're important policy determinations MPCA has set forth in this document and made in preparation for this document, such as what the agency will deem the definition of production of wild rice and what the agency will see as the criteria for listing wild rice waters. Those are set forth in this document. So, I mean, those are things the agency is essentially saying what it's going to handle those things. So I on the one hand, some of these things are said, we recommend this, but I think in reality, they're setting forth the actual requirements for these type of site-specific application standards.
Just so I'm clear, counsel, if I could ask, the MPCA's letter did not refer to the denying your application, did not refer to the framework.
That's correct. It does not reference the
framework. So you're inferring it?
That's correct.
That the MPCA relied on the framework?
Yes.
Okay. But that argument was not, to the best of our knowledge, that position was not articulated by U.S. Steel to MPCA when the agency was making it in that process.
Yes, in that, right, month and a half between, yeah, the issuance of the framework and the denial, I'm not aware of any communications at that time.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
But I think as we've addressed in our brief, I mean, there's the time, you know, MPCA waited 10 years and then a month and a half after issuing this document, denied the application, and there's, you know, word for word language from the
framework. Well, I guess I'll ask one more question then. I appreciate your inference and the basis for it. I did read your brief.
Okay.
So how would that look different if the MPCA had acted on a case-by-case determination?
a case, I think in that case, you know, they wouldn't be guided by this set of pre-established standards and requirements for
site-specific. Right, but they didn't cite those pre-established standards in their letter, so.
I mean, I think they essentially did. I mean, and I think even if you're not saying, okay, well, they didn't mention the framework in that denial letter, the fundamental policies that are in that denial letter, which I think are ultimately the rule that the agency is setting forth.
So you think there's a problem in the letter itself? That's what I'm trying to get you to point out to me is what makes this letter not a case-by-case determination?
Well, I think it's important to distinguish between the set of requirements that MPCA has established for site-specific applicants, and the denial letter bases the denial on those standards, and the way those standards were applied to this particular case, and I might point to the comparison here is the Minnesota Chamber versus MCEA case that's been discussed in here, and that evaluated the application. Whether or not it's Minnesota Rule 7050.0218, and it establishes a process for coming up with site-specific water quality standards for toxic pollutants that aren't addressed in MPCA's rules. So it's a rule that sets forth how you go about doing this, coming up with a site-specific standard for those toxic pollutants. What the chamber challenged was when you come up with those site-specific standards for that specific water, that is rulemaking. But the difference here, I think, is that what MPCA hasn't done here is promulgated those underlying requirements, that underlying methodology, which they've set forth in the framework. They haven't promulgated that by rule. So I think you can have the case-by-case application of those standards to this specific case, Hay Lake or whatever other lake seeks a site-specific standard. But what the problem here is that MPCA is relying on an unpromulgated rule to make those decisions, which is in violation of the law we assert.
Would it have mattered for your argument if the MPCA had not ever published the framework and simply on an ongoing basis applied these principles in granting or denying applications? I mean, would that cut against the idea that this is an unpromulgated rule and support MPCA in saying these are just considerations that we take into account in looking at the specific facts of an individual case?
It's a fair hypothetical, but I think what I would respond is that I think the unpromulgated rule here is the agency's policy or the agency's statements. They happen to have put them all into this framework that not only addresses how we're going to deal with site-specific standards for sulfate, but also what we're going to consider wild rice waters, what we're going to consider the meaning of production of wild rice. That's all documented in this document. I think any of those decisions, like whether you have 10 years of monitoring or don't, those stand alone as unpromulgated rules in that the agency is setting them forth, and they've done that in, you know, I think assorted writings in the time leading up to this framework as well. So I think if it wasn't contained in the framework, it would be less convenient for pointing to a particular collection of these decisions, but I think the analysis would still hold in that case. I might jump to my a second overriding reason here quickly. We're running short on time, but the second reason is that because MPCA acted in excess of its statutory authority regarding two key determinations fundamental to the denial, and that is the designation of Hay Lake as a wild rice water and the establishment of criteria for designating wild rice waters. And the Minnesota legislature, in a series of laws in 2011, 2015, and 2016 specifically, could not have been more clear regarding the requirements and restrictions that it was imposing upon MPCA regarding wild rice waters. And so that is the process of how you decide which waters are going to be subject to the standards. So
why did your client apply for a site-specific sulfate standard if you didn't think that Hay Lake was validly a water that was subject to the rule?
Yeah, I mean, the reason is quite simple, and that is that, this is a company that has to operate day by day, existing with a regulator like MPCA, and so and throughout the process in our application, the company said, hey, listen, we don't think that Hay Lake is wild rice water, but in the abundance of caution and realizing the realities of the situation, we're going to sort of have to alternate in the alternative here and try and see what we can do to work with the agency given the interpretations it's taking. But when this opportunity came up to challenge that, that's what we're doing.
If Hay Lake wasn't subject to the 10 milligram per liter baseline, then what authority would MPCA have to grant a site-specific sulfate application?
You're right. It's an alternative approach here. We're saying, okay, for purpose of this, for us as a company that needs to operate on a day-by-day basis working with MPCA, we're just going to assume you're right, MPCA. And so the best option we can think of here is a site-specific standard, and so that's what we're applying for. So I acknowledge that there's some inconsistency there, but it's just sort of the practical realities of the situation. So the minute and a half I have left here, just to point out that in those laws, I think it's important to point out here that the legislature required MPCA to undertake rulemaking to designate each body of water or specific portion thereof to which wild rice water quality standards apply, and then to not enforce the sulfate standard until it had completed that rulemaking. And the law also required MPCA to, before it designated any waters as subject to a standard on the basis of natural wild rice, to establish criteria for doing so by rule. And those criteria were required to include specific things, including a minimum acreage of wild rice
But can I just follow up some of the question? So if MPCA wouldn't have had authority to grant the application if Hay Lake wasn't subject to the baseline, then how can we reverse their denial of the application on this argument, on the basis of this argument, that Hay Lake was never subject to the baseline? And do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I guess we're challenged as part of MPCA acting, and we're saying that they shouldn't have designated Hay Lake.
Amici, several people make the point that this is something beyond the scope of the specific, whether the denial was correct or incorrect.
Well, I guess I disagree with that. And you know, putting aside the designation, there's also this establishment of criteria and the definition of the beneficial use, this production of wild rice. The whole basis for MPCA's denial of the site-specific standard was that U.S. Steel wasn't able to show that it had it would protect the beneficial use, and so it defined the beneficial use. That, you know, if you put aside those other pieces, you have that core articulation of the beneficial use that MPCA has made that was the basis for their denial. And so, you know, that's still set forth in there, which I think, you know, even if you have some issues with those things, that interpretation is still front and center, and it was a core reason why our application was denied. I see I'm out of time, Your Honor, if there's anything else.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Christina Brown. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Usually I start my oral arguments by telling the court what a case is about, but I think based on the arguments we just heard, it's important to orient the court to what this case is not about. This case is not about whether the statewide 10 milligram per liter sulfate standard is an enforceable standard, because it is. And this case is not about whether Hay Lake is impaired for sulfate, because it is. And it's not about whether the MPCA has the authority to enforce the sulfate standard in permits, because it does. This case is about a very narrow question, and that's whether the MPCA properly denied U.S. Steel's application for a site-specific sulfate standard. And the answer is yes. And the MPCA respectfully requests that this court affirm its denial for three reasons, each of which correlates or corresponds to a mandatory requirement for all water quality standards. First, U.S. Steel failed to demonstrate that its site-specific sulfate standard will protect the existing beneficial use of Hay Lake, which in this case is the production of wild rice. And second, U.S. Steel failed to determine its proposed standard using a scientifically defensible method. And third, U.S. Steel failed to show that its proposed site-specific standard is more appropriate than the current standard of 10 milligrams per liter. Now, before I address each of these criteria, it's important to note two things. First is that it's U.S. Steel's burden and not the agency's burden to demonstrate that its proposed standard meets all three criteria. And second, that failure to meet any of these criteria, let alone all three, is fatal to a site-specific standard request. So turning to the first criteria, applicants have to show that proposed site-specific standards will protect a water's or a water body's beneficial use. Now, as you likely all know, water quality standards all have to have a beneficial use, and that tells us how a water body is meant to be used. That can be drinking water, it can be recreation, or like in this case, it can be agriculture. And at the time EPA approved the statewide sulfate standard in 1973, it approved the same beneficial use that is in place today, which is the production of wild rice. Or to put that another way, the standard's 10 milligram per liter sulfate limit is meant to protect wild rice's continued growth. And at the time EPA approved the sulfate standard, that phrase, production of wild rice, it was understood to apply to both cultivated wild rice as well as naturally occurring wild rice. Similarly, at that time, when referring to production areas, that term encompassed both naturally occurring wild rice paddies as well as cultivated wild rice paddies. Now, U.S. Steel's application does not come close, and this is really the crux of our argument. It doesn't come close to demonstrating that the wild rice production will continue if the applicable sulfate standard for Hay Lake is raised nearly 800%. If you go look at U.S. Steel's application, the vast majority of this data is 11-plus years old. We have field survey data from one of the last 10 years in 2021, and that showed that the wild rice in Hay Lake died off by July of that year. And the field data prior to that, which was from about 2009 to 2014, that also showed a decrease in wild rice density. And I would quickly just point the court, if you have some time later, to go look at pages 7 and 10 of Water Legacy's brief. And there you'll see pictures of wild rice at Hay Lake and the poor health of the crop. And that was part of, I believe it was found in U.S. Steel's application as well. Now, during this same time that U.S. Steel has these field surveys that tend to indicate the declining health of the wild rice population there, there's water quality data that was gathered that showed an average concentration of 34 milligrams per liter in that lake. And rather than look at, you know, test results that show a level of that's three times the applicable standard with a declining wild rice population, the application just simply says, well, our 79 milligrams per liter, that will be supportive of wild rice production. And there's simply no data in the application to support that conclusion. So this failure alone to not demonstrate how this beneficial use is protected, that's fatal to the application, and the court can affirm the MPCA on those grounds alone.
Can we do that even if we agree with them that MPCA relied on an unpromulgated rule?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that the framework is not an unpromulgated rule, and also that it wasn't relied upon by the agency. I don't see how the agency can apply the framework to an incomplete application that's lacking data.
I mean, you would agree that some of the comparisons they make in their brief between the language used in the denial letter and the framework are pretty striking.
I would agree with you, Your Honor. Yes, there's very similar language in both. And I think you have staff working on the framework at the same time and staff working on the denial letter. And I don't think that shows that they relied on it, but certainly if the staff's working on the same stuff, they're going to probably articulate things in a similar way. But I don't see how the MPCA could have used the framework and applied it to this application given the lack of data that's just simply not there. The MPCA couldn't apply the framework and it couldn't see how this data provided by U.S. Steel would support wild rice production because it simply wasn't there. And even if Your Honors, you know, think that the MPCA relied on the framework, I'd make two quick points. The first is that the MPCA wasn't required to go through rulemaking with this framework. This is a quasi-judicial decision. It's a case-by-case basis. The same evidence that applies to one lake, it's not going to apply to the other. There's no two identical water bodies within the state. So anytime the MPCA is making a site-specific standard determination, it's going to be a quasi-judicial proceeding, and rulemaking is not required in those instances. But even if the court, you know, finds that the beneficial use, that criteria was met, U.S. Steel still didn't determine the proposed standard using a scientifically defensible method. The 79 milligrams per liter, that was arrived at solely using the equation from the MPCA's failed 2017-2018 rulemaking proceeding. And despite their assertions, neither the administrative record nor that rulemaking proceeding support a finding that the equation is a viable, scientifically sound method for determining site-specific standards. And that's really for two main reasons. The first, if you go look at the MPCA's SONAR, Statement of Need and Reasonableness, and that's at the record document 107 at about Bates stamp pages 5004 to 5006, they give the reasons for why the equation's not appropriate for site-specific standards. And their rationale, it makes sense. The constant variable in the equation, which is the sulfide concentration, that number was derived from data from about 100 lakes across the state. It's not specific to Hay Lake at all. The only other site-specific measurements in the equation that are taken are carbon and iron from sediment in the water. That's it. There's no other site-specific data. There's no field survey information. There's nothing about Hay Lake as to that site specifically that's taken into account with the equation.
Can you explain how the equation was intended to work? Had it been adopted in 2017? Was it intended to supplant the 10 milligrams per liter statewide standard?
Yes, Your Honor, and it was...
You would use site-specific applications to determine an exception to the equation?
So the 10 milligrams per liter would have been replaced with the equation. The equation has a constant number, the sulfide concentration. That number was determined to be protective at the time of wild rice. And as long as sulfide wasn't, I think it was 120 milligrams per liter, 120 like UG slash per liter, that in correlation with iron and carbon levels would be protective of wild rice. But again, that constant was derived from 100 lakes across the state. You did take in very minimal site-specific data, but if you go to the SONAR, and in those same pages I just cited, the 5004 to 5006, it talks about, and I can pull up, actually I have the documents right there, the MPCA acknowledges that it's not going to be accurate in every single situation, regardless of whether, you know, we're looking under the site-specific rule or under this equation. And it provides alternative methods for determining the appropriate sulfate standard if that equation comes up with either a false positive or we're looking to do a site-specific standard, because in those two instances, the equation is not appropriate. And in addition to the MPCA...
Council, if I could ask, I'm just trying to make sure I understand how your argument relates to the appellant's argument. Clear rejection in the MPCA's letter of the USS Steele's app, on issue two, is exactly what you're talking about right now, that it relied on the equation.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that is flawed. So is that position by the MPCA, does that amount to a rule and therefore would be unpromulgated? I think that's the argument that U.S. Steel, at least one of them, that U.S. Steel is making. So would you respond specifically to that, the rejection of the equation?
Yes, Your Honor. And I don't know that saying something is unusable amounts to an unpromulgated rule. I think the MPCA explained that scientifically, science that was once thought to support this equation no longer supports it. And I would again, Your Honor, remind the court that it is U.S. Steel's application or burden to show that the site-specific standard is appropriate. They had a duty and responsibility to go and look at all the scientific data, explain why their proposed sulfate standard is appropriate, and they didn't do it here. So I don't think that the MPCA is saying, you know, that never again can...
I assume you understand what I'm trying to get at. So, I mean, MPCA advocated, right, for a rule, the equation.
It did.
And so its rejection of it, does that not also amount to a rule? And you're saying no because it's based on what, scientific data?
I'm saying no, Your Honor, because... In this instance, it's not appropriate. It doesn't think that it's likely appropriate for all site-specific standards because it fails to take into account that information. Mm-hmm. Now, if a applicant for a site-specific standard comes and says, well, I think it's appropriate, and here's why, and here's all the scientific data backing it, and I know MPCA, you've told us there's actually scientific data elsewhere that contradicts this equation now, and they explain why that's wrong. Maybe the MPCA would allow the equation's application in that instance. But again, Your Honor, I'm speculating because at its core, we just don't have enough information here.
Yeah. So it's, if I'm understanding your argument, you're saying it's still a case-by-case determination.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, this is just one aspect of it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And as U.S. Steel also argued in their brief, and I'll just touch on this quickly because I think we're talking about the prior rulemaking proceeding, the ALJ in that case didn't, you know, wholeheartedly endorse the equation either and actually had doubts about it, and that was because the same researcher whose data was used to create the equation had another study that was almost complete that showed that those conclusions may have been wrong. And specifically, that same researcher had an experiment or a study that showed that actually, based on those assumptions, we're seeing wild rice die off completely within 2 to 5 years of when the sulfate or use of the equation or those assumptions to create sulfate limits was put in place. And actually, interestingly enough, this theory, it seems to be supported by the TEDRO study cited by U.S. Steel. You know, setting aside some of the issues with that study and the reseeding and the dying off of seeds there, if you go to page 948 of their study, it's going to show that after 2 years, you're seeing a die-off in wild rice there, too. There's a decrease in seed biomass, stem height, shoot dry weight, average seeds per flowering branch. So regardless of, you know, I think which scientific study we're relying on here, there's a lot out there that's showing the equation is potentially no longer applicable, and especially in this situation where we don't have an analysis of that scientific data.
Can I jump you with
yes.
1 minute left? I just want to jump you to your third argument on the more appropriate. Can you explain the language used in the letter, the denial letter, is in the IE aspect of that sentence, is what exceptional circumstances will allow wild rice to thrive and the beneficial use to be protected under a less stringent standard at this location? Can you tell us why that was appropriate language to use in deciding that the more appropriate standard was not met in this case by U.S. Steel?
Well, I think that it almost goes hand in hand, Your Honor, with the first requirement, which is to show that the beneficial use is protected. That language is referring to the fact that there is nothing in the application, and even the data in the application contradicts their proposed standard. All the data there, Your Honor, is showing that wild rice health is declining at averages of 34 milligrams per liter.
I mean, at bottom, to me, I think it seems to me like their dispute is that the words more appropriate seems less stringent than exceptional circumstances. And so why is exceptional circumstances the appropriate analog to more appropriate, I think, is the core of what they'll argue.
Yes, Your Honor. And you know, I think there that, and maybe it's a word choice, an unfortunate word choice, Your Honor, right? But at the end of the day, U.S. Steel had to support their application and show that it is more appropriate. And whether the agency said support exceptional circumstances or not, I don't think the court needs to even get to that question because, again, there is no data in this application that shows that 75 milligrams per liter is going to support the beneficial use and therefore be more appropriate than the current standard of 10 milligrams per liter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just like to address a couple points in rebuttal here. First of all, regarding the beneficial use, and understand that this definition is critical. I mean, there's been conversations about the meaning of production of wild rice for over two decades now. And that's why the legislature stepped in to say, hey, this is kind of how we think it's supposed to be, and please go do rulemaking on it. PCA totally bypassed that point, and the argument that it's interpreted the beneficial use longstanding back to the 70s in the same way, the record just belies that assertion. And just to give you a couple examples, clearly leading up to the rulemaking, the MPCA was absolutely intentionally revising the meaning of that term, which is critical to this denial. For example, in a 2022 letter, a staff member from PCA says, you know, as we have discussed, a key foundational step is to clearly define the beneficial use. MPCA is considering a working definition of the beneficial use that focuses on establishment and maintenance of a healthy seed bank. And they're talking to tribal partners in EPA Region 5. That was very much in the mix leading up to this issuance. You can also see this by comparing how MPCA articulated the beneficial use in the SONAR in 2017 versus the framework. So in the SONAR, MPCA stated, the proposed revision to the statement of the wild rice beneficial use is use of the grain of wild rice as a food source for wildlife and humans. This is dramatically different than the way MPCA articulated that in the framework, which was the continued generation of wild rice biomass. And finally, even if MPCA had interpreted that term consistently since the 1970s, in 2011, the Minnesota legislature clarified that with language in the rules that we explained in our brief that very clearly defines waters used for the production of wild rice and natural wild rice waters, suggesting that this term production of wild rice refers to something other than a water like Hay Lake where wild rice simply happens to be growing. If I could also jump to the question of the science regarding the use of the equation. So in the framework, MPCA disavowed itself from the use of the equation. And government agencies can change their position, clearly. But to do so, they must give a reasoned explanation. And here, the equation was supported by literally years of peer-reviewed studies. MPCA's abandonment of that equation was supported by a few sentences in the framework and in the denial letter. MPCA is also simply wrong that the equation will not produce a site-specific standard. And I can quote MPCA from the 2017 SONAR here. They say, the proposed revisions replace the existing 10 milligram per liter numeric sulfate standard with an equation that translates a projective concentration of sulfate in the sediment pore water to a calculated sulfate concentration in the overlying water that will be protective of wild rice in that particular wild rice water. That was the entire point of the equation, was so that we could, on a site-by-site basis, have a protective sulfate standard instead of a statewide 10 milligram per liter standard.
Is it your position that to follow up on Judge Bratpohl's questions earlier, that the decision not to credit the equation in this particular instance for this particular application was unpromulgated rulemaking? Or is it what MPCA says, they followed the evolution of the science and looked at it in this particular case and said it was not appropriate to determine what standard should be used for Hay Lake?
Well, I think it is, on the one hand, I think it is part of the unpromulgated rulemaking that MPCA is making decisions about what is necessary to protect the beneficial use, and they disavowed that equation. So, but with regard to the type of data that's needed for these things, I think it's also important to understand that MPCA is never operating with the most current data. So, you know, for example, these permits are five-year term permits. MPCA has to evaluate that data at the time they receive it, and the most current science, and this court acknowledged that in MCEA versus Winstead. They said, as MPCA explains, it issues MPDS permits every 5 years and does not wait for indefinitely perfect data, makes its best judgment based on data available at the time, and quoted Upper Blackstone Water from the First Circuit saying, neither the Clean Water Act nor EPA regulations permit the EPA to delay issuance of a new permit indefinitely until better science can be developed.
But should MPCA have ignored then any updates in the science and just judged it by the best available data as of 2017 and what would have supported the equation then?
Well, frankly, what MPCA should have done is issued this sooner than a decade after the application was issued. But I mean, so absolutely the most current science is important here. But also once you decide on a site-specific standard, the MPCA has the ability to evolve that. I mean, if evolved science or evolved data suggests that this standard is no longer protective of the beneficial use, then MPCA has the option of going in and revising that water quality standard. In fact, they're required under the Clean Water Act to do that every 3 years, see if these water quality standards are still protective, and they had the option to do that in this case as well, but, you know, chose to sit on that application such that it became stagnant, and U.S. Steel had to update it again. I see I'm out of time, and if I could just say in closing again that U.S. Steel respectfully asks the court to reverse MPCA's denial of the application, remand it to MPCA to complete the statutorily mandated rulemaking before reconsidering the application as necessary. And thank you.
Thank you both, counsel, for your helpful arguments. The matter is submitted. We'll issue a decision in the statutory time frame. We are in recess.